Well, welcome to the Data Report, CIUT Toronto, and we are going to be speaking to Diana Johnston, and we're going to be talking about a book written by her father, Dr. Paul H. Johnston, and it was titled, From Mad to Madness, Inside Pentagon Nuclear Planning, published by Clarity Press, and Diana Johnston is with us now, I think. Are you there, Diana?
Yes, I'm here. I'm glad to talk with you.
Diana, of course, we want to talk about your father's book, and for which you've written an introduction, and I noticed Paul Craig Roberts has a preface to it. I know it's a very important book, and I hope our listeners will obtain a copy. Now, before we do, if you don't mind, you've also written an article, June 21, Counterpunch, and we would like to be updated if we can about that situation in France, and this and your article is titled The Single Party French State as the Majority of Voters Abstain. As I read your article, it reads like there's some sort of a political collapse has happened, because Mr. Macron is a man of no party, and yet he's leading the country.
It is. It's a collapse of the existing parties. That's absolutely right, because the fact is that the existing parties, and I think you can find something like that in other places, you have one that's supposed to be on the right and the other supposed to be on the left, mm-hmm. and one gets elected and does just what the other one would do, and vice versa. And in fact, they have discredited themselves with the voters to such an extent that a new face with very heavy advertising mm-hmm. Won. And but it is the Socialist Party. It's absolutely falling apart. The headlines say it's dying because they can't agree on anything. What's left of them. The Republican Party, which is the other one that has been demolished by Macron, is sort of deciding to support Macron. So really, there's going to be no important parliamentary opposition to Macron. He can pretty much do what he wants.
Yes, and Mr. Macron has his party has an overwhelming majority of the seats. I guess 350 of 577, and yet. Because of the abstentions, do I read this right, that he got this majority with about 20% of the actual eligible voters?
That's right. The abstention has been absolutely record this time, which is a sign of what you say, the collapse of the political system. Because many people just couldn't vote for anybody. Mm-hmm. And the parliamentary elections is in two rounds, as all the elections here. Under 50% voted, and in the second round, 57% abstained. So yes, it's a big majority. But you see, by the second percent, a lot of the potential opposition candidates had already been knocked out. And in fact, in the arrondissement I live in Paris, the 18th, which is tradition. Hello?
Yes, hello.
Which is traditionally a socialist party stronghold. It has the largest North African immigration. It also has Sacré-Cœur. It also has Montmartre, but it's a solid left. And this time, in the second round, there were two candidates, both for Macron. So, mm-hmm. At that point, you just don't bother to vote, because the divisions of the left, the weakness of the left, has mm-hmm. has given Macron an overwhelming majority. And, of course, he has had the media with him.
Yeah. He reminds, looking at him and listening to him, he reminds us, he sort of feels like Tony Blair. And your article points out that he's surrounded by interesting people, one Mr. Jacques Attali, if I pronounce it right.
Yes.
They are proud globalists, and they talk about the presidency as though it's not all that important.
Well, yes, I think that that's pretty much the idea. But you know, the thing is that those people have really put Macron in. I mean, put him in because, of course, he was elected. But there was a huge advertising campaign and financial campaign behind him because they found he was talented. He's smart. And he was on their side and young and a new face and so on. And the thing is that he has been put in precisely to save that part of globalization, which is called the European Union. That's his mission. He's been put into that because it's known to be in serious difficulty, to become increasingly unpopular. It's not working economically in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And so really, you saw the foreign policy article months ago said that Macron was, you know, was the one who was going to save Europe. He's really been picked by the capitalist elite to save Europe. Mm-hmm. So that's not really the same as Tony Blair.
Yeah. I did like the line from Marine Le Pen when she told him in the debate that after the vote there would be a woman in charge of France. It'd either be her or Mrs. Merkel.
Yes, and no, because of course she's up for election next year, and of course she always wins, but even that can change. what that means really is that Macron's project is to secure France's place in the European Union and to secure the European Union. And so he's going to be up against Mrs. Merkel. But the difference is that the conflict has always been there with the Germans giving the rules. And the idea is that perhaps Macron is going to find some ways to squeeze some concessions out of the Germans, which and that could happen simply because Germans might realize if they don't make some concessions, the whole thing may fall apart.
Yeah, well, certainly what you describe is he has a rather unstable situation in that he has a lot of political neophytes who are there to vote for him, but meanwhile, the society itself has got a bunch of problems. Going to make it kind of a nightmare to rule. I guess the last point I want to ask you about before we go to the book is that he is one for he wants to make Europe into a more of a military. He has a military aspect to his outlook. What is that?
Yes, exactly. Well, for one thing, you see, France still has a military industry, and I think it wants to secure that military industry by inserting it into Europe and having Europe spend more on defense that will be a European defense. And of course, anything that is military spending is dangerous. On the other hand, I want to point out he's not Tony Blair because he has said that that there will be no more welcome for neoconservatives. And he has criticized the Libyan war as a mistake. And he
that was striking. That was very striking.
Exactly.
Unexpected, so actually.
Oh, he's not Tony Blair. But you see, it's not as unexpected as it may seem, because that's the position of all the other candidates. Got to realize the deep state here is not the deep state in the United States.
Again, we are speaking to Dinah Johnson. And about an article, the single party French state, it's in Counterpunch. And Diana, on this point about, you were indicating that Macron is going to be setting a somewhat different course, and you pointed out that he says now that the Libya operation was a mistake. And I noticed he also said that he's not in favor of demanding the removal of Assad, which seems very important.
Well, yes, it is important, and he said specifically that this was his policy change, and you have to realize that France had been sort of taking the lead, and we must get rid of Assad. The socialist foreign minister, Fabius, had said, Assad does not deserve to live on this earth.
Yes,
I mean,
I
it
remember.
Was terrible. And
terrible.
And Macron was just showing a bit of good sense, and he says he wants stability in Syria. He's not going to say that Assad must go because nobody has shown him the legitimate successor, mm-hmm. which is just a sensible thing to say. So he's not Tony Blair.
Yeah.
He's not Tony Blair.
Yes.
I think, that's lucky.
Yes, we've established that. Well, we are speaking to Diana Johnson, and this point about a somewhat of a movement by France, again, to indicate that they are going to set a course that's different from that of the one dominated by, certainly by U.S. rhetoric, that raises the very important matter of nuclear weapons, because now we have increasing difference of opinion amongst powerful states. And as you point out in an article in Counterpunch, and having to do with the book by your father, From Mad to Madness, Clarity Press, the United Nations has been talking now for 3 weeks about a very vital issue, banning nuclear weapons. Yet, there is no public discourse at all. I have to tell you, certainly Canada doesn't even know this discussion's going on. Why?
Most people don't know. It hasn't been supported by the main nuclear powers themselves. So, in fact, let's put it this way. It's rather a futile exercise politically. Of course, if they can come up with some formula that could be used if people came around to wanting it, that could be, you know, that could be a preparation for something. Mm-hmm. But right now, and my point in the article is that we're not at a point where we can go to the technical, because we're in the psychological. Because the real problem now is the madness, to use part of the title of the book, the madness in Washington, which is actually preparing for nuclear war with Russia. Of course, they say, you know, we're defending ourselves in other countries always, you know.
Yes.
But it's completely insane what's going on in Washington. And mm-hmm. the first thing that needs to be done to get rid of nuclear weapons and the threat is to restore some form of sanity to Washington.
Mm-hmm. By the way, the title of the article is Nuclear Weapons Banned? What needs to be banned is U.S. arrogance, and you provide a very telling example of Nikki Haley, who is President Trump's representative of the United Nations, rather like her predecessor, actually. And she said, I read in your article, that it's not worth talking about banning weapons because would North Korea? Isn't the answer, why don't you ask them? And my recollection is they showed an interest in this resolution.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's absurd to imagine that North Korea, a little country, is going to start nuclear war. They have nuclear weapons quite clearly as a defense and as a bargaining chip, which means they would like to bargain with them to mm-hmm. for some settlement in the region. That's perfectly clear and has been clear for decades. And so the North Korean weapon is being used as an excuse, as Nikki Haley used it, as if that's the great threat. Of course, it's the United States with its growing nuclear arsenal that's the threat, obviously, mm-hmm. to everybody.
Mm-hmm. I'll take a step back. I can recall, and I'm sure you can, that ban the bomb was a wonderful phrase, and people rallied to it behind Bertrand Russell and many others. And it was a popular idea that we discussed in editorials and op-ed pieces. Was it the Bushes and the New World Order and the Clintons? How did we lose focus on ban the bomb?
Well, I think that the title of my book suggests some of that. You see, my father was a senior analyst during the Cold War. And, of course, his memoir recounts the rather frightening things that were going on. But the conclusion that was drawn, more or less, in the 1960s was what you call MAD, the Mutual Assured Destruction, mm-hmm. that a nuclear exchange between the United States and the Soviet Union would end in the destruction of both of them. Yeah. And I think the idea of MAD reassured people. It mm-hmm. reassured people that, well, it's been decided that nuclear war is impossible because it would destroy everybody.
It's unthinkable.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a reasonable conclusion. But the plain fact is that Washington is going on right now planning to win nuclear war with, you know, perfected weapons and so on and so on. And in fact, that's why I say the madness is gone from mad to madness. We are back to a point of where the threat is even greater than it was 50 years ago.
Well, your father, as I understand his arguments, of course he details from personal knowledge, the problem with people who sit in rooms thinking about these things is that some of them begin to think of how they could win.
Yes, exactly.
And once that bug gets loose, I have to say, I bet you think of this, it's like your father's writing and evidence makes out the case that we saw in the movie Dr. Strangelove.
Oh, absolutely. Because, you see, well, you have this hierarchy, too, and people are working for people who are going to decide. They don't decide. They are just hypothetically, you're supposed to try every every possible policy. So they don't have to decide. So they can go on imagining blowing up everybody.
Yes.
But the only thing that the leaders ever read is an executive summary,
yes.
which will usually emphasize how strong we are.
Yes. And of course, yes, they give them every option. And then if you have a Bush or a Clinton or Trump, they take, it's like a flavor that they want, right? They pick
exactly.
the one.
Yeah, because...
They're not the deep thinkers.
The serious studies, as I say, the most serious part never reaches the top. Mm-hmm. It's the gloss. It's that we are the most powerful, blah, 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 and that's what reaches the top. Mm-hmm. And so in fact, the leaders are never all that well informed, even though there's tons of squads and battalions of intellectuals working on these problems. At the top, it's sort of intuitive.
Mm-hmm. This is frightening enough. But we're speaking to Diana Johnson. We're about the book by her father, Dr. Paul H. Johnston. From Mad to Madness, published by Clarity Press, subtitle is Inside Pentagon Nuclear Planning. And as you point out in your article, there's a shift in the mindset, which is, everybody should notice this. By the way, I was once in the military, so I have some sense of it. But because they're not talking about defeating people, they talk about destroying people.
And that, to me, yes.
That their idea of victory is destruction, not defeat. I mean, you can get, by maneuvering, you can get another army to just quit. But if your idea is to destroy them, you don't let them quit, you kill them.
I know. I find this particularly alarming. I mean, it's something in the American mindset that I find is, a peril for the universe, because it's become a habit with the Americans to say they will destroy the enemy. And it's in our doctrine. We'll destroy the enemy, not defeat the enemy. And there's no respect, in the mentality, in the Manichaean mentality in mm-hmm. Washington, there's no respect for the other side. Throughout history, you've had, I think of in the Iliad, there's a case where the enemies sort of meet and respect each other.
Yes.
Historically, there's been, and I think among military, you can admire the bravery of your opponent, and that will help you to make peace at the end of the conflict.
Yes.
And the United States shows nothing but utter contempt for the people it chooses to consider enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And this contempt goes along with the will not to make some compromise and end, but to destroy them entirely.
Yes.
And, of course, the nuclear bombs fit completely into that mindset.
Yes. Actually, we know from various crises that as soon as one develops, you begin to see bumper stickers, nuke them, you know, just nuke that problem.
Exactly.
And again, we're speaking to Diana Johnson. The book is by Dr. Paul H. Johnston, From Mad to Madness, Inside Pentagon Nuclear Planning. By the way, that must have taken a toll on your father, wouldn't it? I mean, he obviously felt he had to tell this story. That'd be tough to be in there talking about these matters on a regular basis.
He was not temperamentally suited to this particular exercise. I describe in the book he started out as a writer, an economist, a writer for the Department of Agriculture in the New Deal with Henry Wallace. His whole the career plan was to be, you know, helping people and developing agriculture and so on. And the war, of course, changed the whole mood in Washington from the New Deal to kill them, kill the enemy. And he tried to go back into reclamation, but there was a problem there, a political problem. And then he was in China at the time of the... So he ended up in the Pentagon.
He's a great witness. He's a wonderful world witness.
Yes, right. And he was a witness because he was, you know, but he writes in a very cool style, you know. I mean, he was appalled, but he avoids hyperbole. It's very straightforward, very factual.
Mm-hmm.
And, pardon?
Further to that, by the way, we need more such writers. They're few and far between now. We don't have a Bertrand Russell rallying everybody to ban the bomb any longer. And it's amazing how quiet people are. You point out mutual respect would be a big step towards peace. Here we have the United Nations. And I have to tell you, Canada... voted against this ban resolution. They gave as their reason that they are under the nuclear protected by the nuclear weapons of the United States. They used, I think, the term umbrella.
I know, it's absurd.
Nuclear weapon umbrella.
I know what an umbrella looks like when a nuclear bomb goes off.
And they didn't.
You know, a mushroom cloud.
Exactly.
The umbrella.
We can all imagine the stick figure cartoon of before and after the nuclear blast, what that umbrella looks like. But also, they did not vote for the idea of the concept of, that the nuclear weapons be used under any circumstances, not be used. They voted against that.
So
Canada is keeping open the idea of use of nuclear weapons.
Well, I feel that Western leaders, for the most part, I hope maybe this little sign of change with Macron is positive, but I think that, you see, largely Western leaders under United States domination have stopped thinking about important matters. They just, mm-hmm. you know, the umbrella really means I don't think about anything anymore.
Yes.
That's what being under the nuclear umbrella means. I mean, it's an absurd expression, and it just means, well, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not responsible. I'm not thinking about anything. And that's been the attitude of the Western leaders. And I do think, I do perceive in France...
Mm-hmm.
I see articles or statements by retired military men, by retired diplomats, and sometimes by not retired diplomats, who are very aware of what's wrong. Mm-hmm. That's true in France. Of course, the media is totally Americanized. Mm-hmm. So the public is treated to all of the... But you know, I think they don't believe it. And the fact that it's getting so frightening, mm-hmm, may actually incite European leaders to say, wait a minute, this is going too far.
Yes.
Because, of course, the situation in Ukraine and so on is extremely dangerous.
Yes. Well, and apropos of that, perhaps we should take heart from the fact that in the last days of the campaign in Britain, Prime Minister May challenged Jeremy Corbyn, saying, she said, the answer to the question, what would you do if nuclear missiles were fired toward Britain? Would you push the button? Yes, I would. And what would Jeremy? And Jeremy didn't buy into the question at all.
Mm-hmm.
That big vote for him might have been partly rooted in people in who understand the total destruction would come from nuclear war.
Well, I think you, it's interesting because, in fact, Britain and France are the leading Western allies, militarily and so on, of the United States. Mm-hmm. And they because they are nuclear powers themselves, more or less, although the British nuclear power is, bomb is under U.S. control, actually. But the fact that serious doubts are arising in these two countries, which are key to this issue, is a good sign. And of course, Corbyn, his relative success in the election is a very good sign, because he is known for consistent commitment on,
yes,
the issue of peace and against war.
Yeah.
So I think that's a very positive sign. And although this was not so much an issue with Macron, I think, as I say, the other candidates were saying we must improve relations with Russia. And he didn't exactly say it, but he seems to be getting ready to do it, nevertheless,
mm-hmm,
more subtly and so on. But I think there's a real mood here,
yes,
to take, mm-hmm, advantage of the chaos in Washington,
yes,
to escape.
Yes, I think you're right. Actually, thank goodness the Europe does speak up. I believe it was the British Parliament vote against bombing Syria in 2013. It stopped.
That's right.
Stopped Obama from going mad.
And everybody forgets about that. It is just amazing. The media and everybody go on as if Obama simply didn't cross his red line after all, without,
yeah,
realizing there was a opposition in the political opposition,
yes,
and this deal that was suggested by the Russians, or that to take away, which worked, away the Syrian government's chemical weapons. I mean, that whole chapter, which is quite interesting and looked hopeful, has simply been eradicated from the mainstream media and discourse. Astonishing.
It is astonishing. Well, we've been speaking to Diana Johnson. This is a great book from by her father, Dr. Paul H. Johnson, From Mad to Madness, Ash, Inside Pentagon Nuclear Planning, and it's published by Clarity Press. It is introduced by Diana Johnson and has a preface by Paul Craig Roberts. Diana, thank you very, very much. I hope you have a nice holiday, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you very much. Best luck to you.
Okay. Bye-bye.